But then, of course, if you go and eat a donut right after going to the gym, then what happens? Does it undo what you did? Not necessarily. I mean,
it's an undo nut.
Butterscotch
shenanigans. Hey, everybody, and welcome to episode 13. Lucky episode 13.
Of Super lucky.
Coffee with Butterscotch. My name is Sam.
I'm Seth.
And I'm Adam.
And we are Butterscotch Shenanigans. We are a three-brother indie game studio making sweet, sweet gamey love.
And I did not interrupt Sam this time.
You did. Nope. You held back.
Although I sort of did, so...
Well, at least someone did.
Yeah. That's... Maintain tradition. Traditions are important to maintain, no matter how dumb they are.
It's about That's culture. Right. It's about culture it's about and richness culture. Of life experience.
Mm-hmm.
So today we're going to talk a little bit about some Crashlands stuff. A little bit of a Crashlands update.
Crashlands is the game that we're working on as a studio. We've been working on it for about a year and a half. It is a huge crafting game that's supposed to be story-driven, but up until now we didn't actually have a story in it.
It was like we were selling vaporware, you know? We were like, there's going to be a story.
We were vaping.
Yeah. Vaping. I mean, that's worked out pretty well for the e-cig industry. Yes. So we thought we would get in on that. But yeah, story so that vapes. So the tool that Adam has been developing to allow us to build story stuff is done and hooked up to the game, and all the plugs are corked in.
Or the corks are plugged, and I mean,
however that works.
Have it both ways.
So Sam has been spending the past week jamming on all that and writing story and building little villages and characters.
I made one about a man who's starting a yoga stand, and you had to bring him some throw pillows.
Yeah, well, you gotta have pillows. You can't do yoga without pillows. It's really know anything about yoga, but I'm pretty
actually,
sure
it's... I think you can't do yoga with pillows.
That's actually true, but...
Well, this is space yoga.
Oh, right, yeah.
It's different by
space
alien.
Yoga has its own rules.
Yeah.
Involving throw pillows, I guess.
So without further ado.
Actually, what's the difference between a throw pillow and a regular pillow?
Throw pillows, I believe, are projectileable in that they can be thrown.
But couldn't also any old pillow be projectileable?
Well, I mean, it depends on if you're looking at the average strength of your pillow purchaser. On average, it's not high enough.
So on average, a regular pillow cannot be thrown.
Correct.
Anything can be thrown. It's mostly about ease of throwing.
Yeah, that's
what I'm saying. I think a throw pillow is it's small enough that you can wing it like a frisbee.
It's more accessible
for throwing.
I mean, this is why in a pillow fight, you know, you can think of a normal pillow almost like a club. It's like a pillow mace. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
You know, you just beat your opponent with it. But when you get throw pillows in the mix, then suddenly a pillow fight becomes a much more, you know, sort of a ranged combat
sport kind
of affair.
Right.
Yeah.
I see. So regular pillows are for melee.
Throw pillows
are for ranged combat.
Yes. Yeah, so you're gonna want at least one phalanx of throw pillowers.
A phalanx.
In the background. You know, launching them overhead and also catching and returning throw pillows that have been thrown, you know, erroneously in your direction.
Yeah, and I have read about some historical accounts of people setting throw pillows on fire before hurling them at their opponents.
Well,
faces.
And also filling them with diseased people. Right?
Yeah, and also using cows full of disease on fire as throw pillows.
Yeah,
not super comfortable.
No. Or really beneficial long term.
Yeah, it really makes your couch look pretty shitty.
They're basically just for throwing.
They're exclusively throwing pillows. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so that's what we've been working on.
What were we talking about? Oh, the creator.
Creator.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's also just stories that are popping up now in the game. Really fun stuff. I'm not going to spoil any of it, of course, because you got to play it.
It's cool though, because basically Sam can just go plug in. He can make a new outpost and add a story to it, and then just it's in the game instantaneously.
Yeah, it's a real slick mechanism, and everybody will get to use it at the end of the day, which is fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, not everybody.
Not people
who bought the game get to use it.
Got to pay up to get on the ride. Pony up. But without further ado, let's get to some questions, Adam.
Leave your ado at the door.
For those unacquainted, you can go to podcast.bscotch.net, not only to view the podcast and all previous ones, but also to ask questions. And we actually take questions for the majority of the podcast and answer them from our fans. And you can vote on other people's questions, so you can see one rise to the top. And it's pretty hardcore. It's a pretty highly competitive environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we have to take whatever questions go to the top. I mean, that's the rule that we arbitrarily self-imposed.
Just now.
So,
unless we delete one.
Which means, you know, our... our podcast listeners can ask us pretty much whatever they want.
And as long as we don't delete it, then we'll answer it.
Yeah.
What it comes down
there's
to.
Basically just not intensely personal crap, but, you know, just regular stuff. Whatever you want to know, just ask.
So the first question.
And not horrible things.
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
Well, I mean, maybe I guess things. There are certain kinds of horrible things that are allowed, I guess. There must be a better word that really means something we don't want.
I don't think there is. I think every word has kind of been desensitized now, Adam.
I think that's true.
You know what I'm saying?
No racist things.
Wait, that's an easy one.
Yeah, there we go.
We'll just keep
Boom. Nailed it.
All right, so Gafferman with the first non-racist question of the day. Asks,
good job, Gafferman.
First and only.
Yeah, all the rest of them.
They're all pretty racist, so this is going to be a short podcast.
Having carved out your own niche on the App Store, what iOS games / developers do you feel deserve more attention? Also, can we talk about the word niche for a second?
Is it niche or niche?
I think it's actually both. I'm pretty sure it's both, and nobody cares.
Or niche.
I would prefer niche, I think. I like niche.
Having carved out your own niche on the App
niche.
Store.
Niche!
It does sound cuter that way.
Right?
Yeah. So, yeah, what's the question that you were going to say about niche?
Well, Mike, it's a niche word, I guess, is what I was...
Niche is a niche word. People use it all the time.
They do, but it's got such a specific meaning.
Of course. Don't all words
have...
I mean, they do, but like most words you can bend around quite a bit, you know, during your regular course. Like carved here.
I think niche is pretty bendy, because...
I don't think so. Niche is like a small area.
It definitely can't be used as a verb.
I could niche something. Like, I'm niching things right now.
One of my favorite
Adam's
words
just
is,
niching all over the place.
One of my favorite words is fish, because it's a noun, a verb, and a different noun.
Fish.
But only if you use it in the most obscure meanings possible.
No way, man. You
Which
can
in my
fish
opinion doesn't
fish.
Even count. Yeah. There's two of them. Give me the other ones. Give me the other ones.
The third one is it's a sort of like a support strut used to hold up a crossbeam.
Yeah, fuck that.
So
I guess
it doesn't count.
You can make a whole sentence out of it, right? Fish.
Nobody will understand that sentence because nobody knows that third definition.
Well, no, that's not really
a
sentence.
Fish. I mean, like
fish. Wait, is it an adjective?
Fish. No.
Fishy.
As in, it's not an adjective.
As in
you can fish.
As in there's a race of fish people who are fishing for fish. Fish.
I don't think that works.
A race of fish people who are fishing for fish.
If fish can fish for fish, then that's fine.
It's like that buffalo.
I think that I keep seeing that around. I think it's totally bogus.
I mean, it is bogus because, like Adam was saying, no one's gonna know what you're talking about.
You can't.
It's one of those things where
sentence.
It's technically correct, but practically useless.
Yes,
right.
So anyway, what games? What's the question?
Niches get stitches.
Games/developers do you feel deserve more attention?
I don't know.
Here's the thing.
How are we supposed to know who needs
for
more
the,
attention?
For the most part,
if
the
they
ones
don't have any
that,
attention, we don't know who they are.
For the most part, the ones that have attention need way less attention.
You mean like King.com?
You know what I mean.
Candy Crush?
Sure. And the ones that are not getting attention mostly should continue not getting any attention.
Most of them.
What's left are the ones that should be getting attention, except none of us get to hear about because all the ones that shouldn't be getting attention are taking literally all the attention. And then they have to compete with a whole bunch of things that don't deserve any attention whatsoever.
The word attention is kind of getting like numb for me right now. You know,
replace it with niche.
Yeah, the problem
people
is
getting
that actually
niche.
the App Store doesn't really have a lot of niches. It just sort of has the top 20.
It has the App Store.
It has whatever's featured
the niche
that
is
week
most
and
popular.
Is the top of the charts.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
which isn't much of a niche. Much of a niche.
Yeah, and to be frank, we actually don't really have a niche on the App Store. We got featured for Flop Rocket, which did great for us, and now it's back down to practically no downloads at all.
Yep, right? Nobody gives a crap that our games are there anymore.
Yeah.
Actually, the only niche you can have in the App Stores, any of the App Stores, is to launch a game and then be on the front page during launch.
You get a 1 week niche.
Right.
So you better enjoy it.
And your niche is the front page. And now niche is losing its meaning as well.
All right, well, we should probably...
None of these...
Well, I think
we'll move on then.
Well, none of these words mean anything.
But the problem here is that... So we throw this number around a lot, which is that there's about 3,500 games that come out every week on iTunes. 3,500.
500 a day.
So when you talk about... Like, that is such a huge ocean of content that is available. New content. Now, this isn't even talking about, like, updates and crap.
Yeah.
New content that's available at that staggering rate. When you have a storefront that does as terrible a job as actually Google Play does almost the exact same thing. I mean, all the stores kind of just grabbed what iTunes did when they started because they're like, well, it worked for them. But when you have...
And it does work for them.
It does. It does. But when you have...
Just not for everybody else.
When you have that big of an ocean of content being released every single week and the only means by which you get to interact with it in a meaningful sense is via a top 10 list, which actually has remained the same for about like 3 years now or something like that. Something maddening. Mm-hmm. Like the games that are there now are the same games that have been there.
Except for the new list, but again, there you're competing with 3,500 people a week.
Right, and that goes out every week, yep. Right? So there is no...
Well, and this is partially why we are excited about moving over to Steam, because Steam will give you a custom storefront based on your interests, right. Which is a crazy idea, but they've managed to do it. So that way, it's, you know, in the ideal market, the ideal games market, you see every game that is interesting to you, and the seller of that game gets to show it to everyone who might be interested in buying it.
Yeah, it's right? The whole concept of targeted marketing, right? It's like you don't have to annoy people because... Yeah, the people you're talking to actually are interested in your product. Yeah, right?
Everybody. Well, that's one of the problems that we had with, because even though we did get the feature spot for Flop Rocket, and that was really good for Flop Rocket, almost all the people who downloaded it just, you know, opened it up and then uninstalled it immediately because it's not their kind of game.
It wasn't being shown to the right people.
Yeah, we actually, because there is a niche
it
of
was just
people
being shown
who
to
would
everyone.
Want our games, but it's there is no, you know, targeting to those people to get our games to them. And so instead, our options are basically nobody sees our games. Or everybody Everyone. Does for a short period of time.
No matter who they are or where they are, yeah. Or whether they would like it at all.
So I think,
and that's also why
it.
you get shitty ratings for stuff all the time too. Because if you take especially a game that is meant for a targeted audience, and then you show it to everybody, and then let all those people play it because there's no barrier to entry for free to play games and stuff, then you're gonna have all this just people are gonna heap garbage on it. They'll be like, oh, you know, one star because this game has a character with red hair and I hate red haired people, right? You get just that kind of garbage.
Yeah, that kind of racism.
Yeah,
yeah. Well, I think the interesting point there, I think, Gafferman, is just that we haven't actually gotten to carve out our own niche yet. And part of it is with the Bscotch ID system that we built, the backend system, which now we have basically a bank of people who we can send an email to and say, hey, here's a game that you probably like because you like our other games.
Yeah. We're trying to grow a niche outside of the App Store.
So I would say we're just beginning to actually be able to carve, thanks to Adam's addition onto the team. Mm-hmm. Before, it was just Seth and I kind of like,
good job, Adam.
It's all me.
It's all Adam. But that being said, yeah, I think Adam's point is very valid, which is just that it's really hard to know who deserves more attention because there's so much stuff coming out that literally, I played Alpha Bear on mobile. I think it's the only mobile game I've played in the last 3 months.
I've been playing the crap out of You Must Build a Boat. We already talked about that in a previous episode.
Yeah, but I played it on Steam, right?
I think there's more to that as well. I mean, I think about when we were growing up as little kids. We'd get our allowance money or whatever, and we'd save it up, and then about once every 3 months, we'd make a trip over to Comp USA.
Oh my god, I love that!
And they would have about 20-ish PC games.
There was two aisles.
They would have about 20 games, and 10 of them we had already seen because those were the same ones that were there the last time. So there'd be like 10 new games every few months, and we'd go through and we'd scour the box art and everything, and then pick the one we liked and we'd buy it. But that's gone. Like, there's so many games out that nobody gives a crap.
Well, you would buy it, and you would go home and you would play the whole thing, over a few weeks or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you would go buy your next game because there weren't very many games and they were expensive.
Right? And I think, the same thing applies to books and movies and, with digital distribution of all these things, I can pop up a Netflix and I can scroll through 200 movies and at each one I'm like, meh, I don't know. Like, there's just so much stuff out there that you always feel like there's probably something better just around the corner.
Yeah.
And you'll just spend way more time even just browsing.
But we would go like to the video store to rent movies back in the day. You'd make a circuit of the whole place. And there were still, maybe a couple hundred movies or something. Yeah. But that was in total.
Yeah, you'd go to the new releases.
Yeah, exactly. And you'd be like, okay, there are 30 games.
Exactly, yeah. And in a given section, if you're like, I feel like giggling tonight. You go to the comedy section, there's like...
Yeah, and there's like 30 games or whatever.
Yeah, and so there's something good to be said about having a limited selection. And I think people get really carried away with, oh my God, I have 2 million books available on Amazon. You can't fucking read 2 million books.
The question, the thing to get excited about would actually be if Amazon said, we have a sorting algorithm that will look at all 2 million books, you take a 10-minute questionnaire, and then we'll serve to you a list of 30 books that will have the greatest impact on your existence.
That'd be so good.
Maybe we should make that.
But yeah, I mean,
well, I mean, Amazon tries to do that. They just don't do
it. They do it without your permission.
Right.
Well, that's not, it's not even without your permission. It's without, it's without doing anything interesting, because they just say, well, you bought this book and this book. Somebody else bought those two books and this third one. So therefore you want this third one, right?
Yeah.
They infer your interests based on overlap between yours and the interest of a million other people, which is very effective, you know, for some things, but it doesn't.
Well, it has the same problem though, which is that, so this is the interesting thing about this whole question of, you know, deserving attention, which is that all of those systems, because they're based on, you know, algorithmic behavior, serve just to reinforce stuff, right?
Well, it's so, a rich, I mean, everything's a rich,
it's a,
get richer.
It's a positive feedback.
Right, exactly. So like the interesting thing, and I've heard people lament this a bit about the fact that there aren't really, anymore, there's not really bookstores that you go to where you can be like, you know, you could talk to someone, a human, who's infinitely better at categorization than anything that exists on the planet. And you could say, hey, you know, I'm looking for a book. It's kind of like this, but with this sort of thing. And they can suggest something to you that you simply could not get to at present using the current computational methods.
True, but even still, the only books that those people are aware of were the ones that they were aware of. Right? So it's still, it's just the inherent problem with how this works, right? Is that it has to be a positive feedback system. It's just the only way it can work. Otherwise, you have to just try to distribute attention across infinitely many things.
Amazon can't go, hey, you liked book A, which has sold a million copies and everybody's been reading it. Book B, nobody has read yet.
No, it's not only that. Here are 5,000 book Bs.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
As far as I can tell, are all the same, because nobody has read them, so I don't have any data about them.
I don't have any tags.
Yeah, so how do I give you the one that actually is going to be, and then to top that off, of course, because the barrier to entry keeps getting lower and lower, which, you know, for us, I mean, this is a good thing in a lot of ways, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't even be able to do this. Mm-hmm. But that also means that, you know, as it gets lower and lower and lower, then just anything can exist there. And
well,
so,
it is kind of bad. It is kind of bad for content creators as a whole. Like, it's great for the individual who wants to get in, you know, get in at the ground floor.
Well, it's great. Yeah, it's great for entry. I mean, well, it's only great in the sense that you get to enter.
Yeah. Right. But as far as getting to actually be successful, and, you know, we've been battling with this all the time, is that when somebody has infinite choices, they value each of those choices at basically zero.
Yeah.
So
you distribute your interest across infinitely many things. So it's just,
yeah. So when there were 10 games available for us to choose from back in the day, it was super exciting. And we would pick one and we would each get one, and we would read the manuals on the way home.
We did,
you know,
read the
manuals. Oh, I loved those things, dude.
Yeah. And they always put concept art in there. Yeah. And like, they, you know, and it was super and by the time you got home, you were so freaking psyched to play this game, and you just sit down and just devour.
Well, shit, I remember when I bought Half-Life 2, which I was actually in college when that finally came out, but when I bought Half-Life 2, I still got it in the box, even though by that point there was actually digital distribution of stuff.
Yeah, there was Steam.
But I still bought it, you know, I still bought the box, and then I even cut the fucking cover off of the box and kept it. It was like, I found it in my stuff, like my old, you know, archives of Adam shit from all of childhood, you know, that fucking cover of that game.
You're like, this game is special.
Yeah, yeah. I was so excited about that game, and I'd been waiting for it for years.
But now,
I saved up to buy it, and yeah, it's just not a thing that is really done.
But now you have so many options that
none of them seem
particularly special.
But I also get to play all of them for free now.
Well, which is also a problem.
Yeah, because now you know, if you can just try everything, you're not invested ever into something up front. So you try. And I mean, there's a problem that I have, you know, personally as well, right? My Steam games, even for stuff that's not free, you buy on Steam sales for, you know, cents on the dollar.
Sure.
And so I have this huge archive of games, and I'm always excited when I buy them because I'm like, hey, some new games that are really cheap, right? But I'm not buying them because it's because of that game. And I'm not like saving up to buy it. And as a consequence, I just have a mountain of games that I've played for between 0 and 5 minutes.
Right.
Because I'm not actually, I haven't invested anything into them.
It's terrible.
Sad. Well, I was thinking about this.
We can't do anything about it.
Yeah. So I'm reading this book on attention and psychological processes for attention. There's one really interesting point the author makes, which is that when you, people who do just like a lot of stuff. So the idea is like highly, highly successful people in general who are handling just a crap load of things at a time. Nearly all of them that they found through this large survey prefer using pencil and paper for keeping track of their shit.
Is that because they're all old people?
It's not because they're all old people. This even extends down.
Young people are barely functioning.
But I mean, there aren't a lot of really excessive young people, or at least successful young people.
Well,
there are a lot of excessive young people.
Take it for what you will. But the other studies that show that like taking writing something by hand essentially encodes it in memory much better than typing it. And part of it has to do with
because it's hard.
Exactly, it's harder to do. And I think it's part of the thing is like when it's just so easy to do.
And then when you're trying to read it afterwards, you have to do so much work deciphering the shit that you just wrote. It's just like garbage chicken scratch.
That sounds more like a personal problem.
Yeah. But it's like going to an archaeological dig, you know, and it's like you have to be a scientist and like decipher this work that you've created, which of course, I mean, how could you not end up having that ingrained in your memory forever, given how much time you spend interacting with it?
I think about like the two sort of principles of memory that we discuss a lot in like just psychological academia stuff is something that is unique and something that is emotive is what gets put in your brain. Emotive meaning that there's some sort of emotion attached to it with, you know, at least a moderate like level of strength.
So you're saying you should intersperse smiley faces in your notes.
Well, I think it's why the Crashlands trailer did so much work for us as opposed to just doing like a normal gameplay video, right? Because it gets to do both, where it's like, here's the unique gameplay, yes. There's also the uniqueness of the, you know, someone screaming.
And then we just kicked the viewer right in the humor balls.
Right. It's just a full wind up and a punt. And I think that's why the thing was so effective, you know, at the end of the day. But I think that's basically what the problem comes down to is that most stuff now revolves around just like, you know, clicking a thing. That's how you get it. It's not exactly exciting. It's not like driving to CompUSA in Des Moines an hour away.
Yeah. There's no adventure.
Yeah. There's not much adventure. You know,
mm-hmm. The soul has been removed.
Soul of life.
Yeah. There's no anticipation. There's no excitement. You just kind of... I remember seeing a... I'll just say this before we go to the next question. I remember seeing a comic that was... It's just like 10 years ago versus today. And the left column was 10 years ago, and it would say something like, getting a book. And he's like at a bookstore. And on the right column today, he's just sitting at his computer. Watching a movie. He's like at the movies, right? And then on the other one, he's just at his computer. Fooling around. He's like in the park throwing a frisbee. On the other one, just at his computer. So we've like packaged everything into all these extremely mundane, instantaneous experiences where all we have to do is wiggle our index finger and we get anything we want. And we just don't give a shit about any of it.
Yeah.
It's the worst.
Well, no, I mean...
But it's also the best.
It's also the best. Like, we're saying a lot of things that sound really negative about how the world works right now. But the fact is, it's fucking awesome to be alive and around, you know, while these things are happening and while the world is changing this way. Because, you know, we're going to start getting really bored with this stuff. And I mean, you already see this like on YouTube, right? Because now it is so easy to get content that all of a sudden you have basically, in the same way we have in the games market, you have hyper competition, like within mm-hmm. YouTube for people to get viewers and that kind of stuff. And you can actually see the consequences of that. And, you know, because these things are in a digital space and there are so many people that are making content because the barrier is gone now, then I think, you know, fairly soon there, you know, we're going to actually see stuff really kind of emerge out of that. That's going to be just new and really cool because it has to. Yeah. Otherwise,
it's definitely in a really bizarre transitional stage right now.
Yeah. And because it changes so fast, it's going to be kind of a series of transitional stages kind of, you know, for the rest of time, which is what it's always been. It's just that those were, you know, a decade long instead of 6 months.
Yeah. I feel like everyone was always complaining about how stuff used to be versus how it is now. Right. That's just kind of, this is how you do. It's a human thing to do. So I'm glad we got to carry the tradition forward.
Yeah. Back in my day.
We had to drive 60 miles to get a video game.
But I mean, being in games,
we called them James for some reason because we didn't know how G's work.
Video James.
But being in games though, and like in web stuff,
I named my first son Video James.
we can look back though and say back in my day, like, you know, 6 months in the past.
Yeah, everything's so crazy.
Which is nuts.
So crazy. Which is why you should never listen to anybody. If they tell you, if they give you advice about any like industry, like tech industry related stuff, because they're probably wrong.
Well, by the time you get to act on it, they're definitely wrong.
By the time they've finished their sentence, it's changed.
All right. So just do your thing.
I think we're going to move on to the next question. That was a long
one. That's fair.
This is from Scotchsty, who asks, whilst making a game, do you ever get fed up playing it ad infinitum?
No.
All right. Well, I guess we can just move on to it.
That was easy. For me, actually, because I'm doing the other stuff, so I don't actually play test the games very much until we're ready for the actual play testing.
Yeah, I guess Seth is actually the only one who plays it all the time.
I'm really the only one who is playing it all the time. But here's the thing: I'm not really playing it.
You're checking out specific things.
I'm just testing game systems. I'll code something. I'll boot it up and be like, oh, that didn't work.
It's kind of like if you considered changing your oil to be driving your car.
Yeah, right. There's some overlap.
They involve the thing, but
which I guess is funny now that you use that metaphor, because a lot of people think that making games is a lot like playing games, and it's just not.
Yeah,
no. It's just like most of what you do when you're making a game is it's like Sam said, it's oil changing. You know,
making a game has
nothing to do with playing the game.
Making a game has a lot in common with, for example, making Microsoft Excel. Right. It's just software engineering, pretty much.
Yeah.
So
it's just in the end, the product is way more fun.
Yeah.
Once you're done making it.
I guess the short answer is we don't really, or I don't really play it much.
Yeah, and every time that I get to play, or Sam actually sits down to play it, the game is totally different.
Yeah, well, so I actually, on Friday, I sat down after getting the story through, basically the first kind of like 6 hours of story done. I sat down to play through it in order to test and see where everything was broken. And that was the first time I've actually gotten to sit down and play through the game in...
probably 5 months.
Like that. I haven't played it in a long time. So, and we've made so many changes that I was like, wow, this is great. And then I played it for 4 hours on accident.
I remember you were like, oh, I need to quickly boot this up and check something.
Yeah, I went in there to look at a thing, and then I just played it for 4 hours.
Yeah.
And I was like, shit.
Yeah, actually, the bigger problem is not getting tired of playing it. It's that when we need to go test a specific thing, we end up wasting a lot of dev time.
Just get sucked in
playing the game instead.
Yeah. So there's your answer, Scotch D. Mm-hmm. Our next question is from the cacti god, who is presumably full of water.
Sometimes.
Yeah, he's a succulent.
He's a succulent plant.
What was the best purchase you ever made?
Probably every time I buy groceries. Food is pretty important.
Yeah.
From a strict utilitarian perspective.
Every time I buy food, it was just as important, if not more important, than the last time.
I don't even really care about purchasing things.
I don't either. Well, I'm sure that because there are all these things that I purchased that were clearly important, you know.
Well, here, I'll just...
But I didn't actually have to buy it, and things would have been fine.
There was a life-changing purchase, which was when I bought Game Maker in 2010.
Nice. Because way to bring that, it right back that, to video games.
Well, that just cascaded... I had been wanting to figure out how to make games for years, and I just never had a way in. And that was the thing that sort of like got my foot in the door.
Well, but what about this though? If we're gonna play that game, what about when you bought gas to go to St. Louis for that game jam?
Yeah. Well, I mean, whether I had gas or not, I would have made it.
That's not how things work.
Yeah, there are a lot of really important purchases in a lifetime. So
engagement rings, those are
what
important
about the
too.
Worst? What about the worst purchase?
That's probably an easier one, actually.
To see. Answer your question,
what's
we're going to answer
the worst money you've ever
question.
Spent.
The worst money I've ever spent.
Worst ever.
Well, I was going to go camping this weekend, but then it thunderstormed.
Did you spend money on that though?
Yeah, I spent like a few dollars on.
I'm going to tell you guys the worst purchase. The worst purchase I've ever made. I bought a bottle of Iowa corn whiskey.
What?
Because I thought I was going up on my annual camping trip to Wisconsin, and I thought I'm coming from Iowa. I'm gonna bring something distinctly Iowan, and that was like 4 years ago, and that bottle is still up there because nobody will drink it.
Wait, have you tried it though?
I tried it, and it was just completely horrible. It burned. It tasted terrible. It like every conceivably horrible thing you can think about a booze. Iowa corn whiskey has it.
This is so strange. I'm trying to think about bad purchases I've made, and
I can't think of any.
I think it's because you don't have them anymore because you probably threw them in the trash.
Yeah, because like I don't know. I live in the present and worry about the future.
Well,
and so
as soon as
like anything that's happened, I'm like, fuck it. That was a sunk cost. Actually, it's a concept of sunk costs.
I believe it's a concept of YOLO.
YOLO swag.
YOLO swag. 360 no scope.
But I think it's the concept of YOLO. I don't even know what that means. But
you only live once, Seth.
Right. So it's either that you forget about it because you didn't give a crap, or you turn around and you justify the purchase by making it seem not as
post hoc rationalizations.
Yeah, because you're like, that was probably a terrible thing, but I'm not an idiot and I don't spend my money stupidly. So it probably wasn't that bad. Yeah. It was fine.
I
meant to spend $80 on that tiny, tiny steak that just tasted like a normal steak in the dimly lit right. restaurant. It's a great experience.
I've had some bad, expensive restaurant experiences. But again, I just kind of forgot about them until you brought it up, the cacti god.
Now it's all just crashing back like a shitty restaurant tsunami.
I mean, even after you brought it up, I still can't remember stuff. I feel great.
Well, actually, even though I'm now I'm slowly remembering some of them, I'm still not able to give a shit yet. But I think if I worked hard at it, I could probably start to give a shit.
You could probably start having regrets.
Yeah, maybe that's why I'm not going to do it. I'm going to keep on living in the present.
That question is a spiral. That is a black hole producing spiral.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I think final question will be another one from the Cacti God. Again, into the regrets area, which apparently is where the Cacti God resides.
I don't know what his deal is.
In the land of regret lives the Cacti God.
He lives in Regret Valley.
Full of water.
Actually, I'm looking at he has a few other questions in here that I'm reading down the list, and there's definitely a theme here.
Cacti God, you should maybe take some time to reflect on your life.
We'll take less time to reflect on your life.
Yeah, some depressing questions.
Just move forward. What is one thing you have always wanted to learn but never got motivated enough to do? Let's talk about regrets, guys.
All right, I'm going to flip this one around, actually.
Onto the Cacti God?
No, I'm just going to flip it around and say, there is no such thing as something that you have wanted to learn but never got motivated enough to do.
Ooh. That's some deep shit right there.
Because if you really wanted to do it, you would have done it.
In the words of Shia LaBeouf,
just do it.
Just do it.
Do it. So
anybody who then says
to do it, then you don't want it.
Yeah, that's right. And so anybody who says, oh, I've always wanted to do this, but then they're just lying to you.
Nope, they didn't. They did not want to do it.
My mentor.
They wanted to want it, but they didn't.
My mentor said that. So he's like a super organized dude, kind of turned his life around from just kind of piddling around to being like a super badass at web software stuff. And he said people always asked him because he tells good stories and he always tells the story of kind of how he got into tech and stuff. And people would ask him to come. They'd be like, oh, I have this friend who just can't, seem to get into it, would you mind talking to him? And so he said for years he would
just
go and
no.
He would meet them over lunch or coffee or something, and they would tell him why their life is falling to pieces or whatever, why they've been trying to learn a thing but can't. And he'd give them all sorts of tips and stuff like that.
And they would never act on it.
Yes, they would never do anything. So finally, after years of this, he just said whenever someone asks him that question, he just tells them to tell the person that when they actually want to do it, they'll just do it. And he's not going to waste his time.
Yeah.
That's it. It's simple.
So
it is very simple.
That's something that I've noticed in, working with the sort of amateur and hobbyist game dev scene, is that you do run into hundreds and hundreds of people who talk and talk and talk about how they want to become a game developer. And then every day they just go home and produce nothing.
Oh my God.
Continue to not
day
be a game
after
developer.
Day after day after day. They do not sit down and code. They don't practice their art. They don't read up on industry trends. They just don't do it.
There's a beautiful webcomic called Zen Pencils. And the one from this week, I'm going to put it in the, I'll put it in the blog post, the link to it, hits on this exactly. And basically what it says is that the actual mechanical pieces for doing pretty much anything. So, how do I play a piano is the example in there. How do I hold my hands? How do I get my posture? How do I read music? The mechanical pieces of this stuff is all sort of it's all being able to be picked up in an hour. The basics of programming are able to be picked up very, very quickly. It's basically,
a variable?
If
what's
this,
a loop?
Then that. Yeah. What's a variable? What's a loop? That's pretty
if
much
then.
It. And then what it is it's simply a matter of
just
practice.
Doing it.
Right.
Yep. Practice.
And so it's like if you can make 40 minutes in your day, and that's what people just have to realize is that if you want to do something,
make 40 minutes in your day, every day, morning or night, where that is the thing you're doing. That's it.
Yeah. And you'll still have time to spare because
you have like 5 hours every day, actually, free time.
Yeah. And actually, so we have an interview coming up over at superphilipcentral.com
or something.
And he, in the interview, he asked the question, how did we teach ourselves to do the stuff that we do? Because each of us has a specialized role. And my answer was kind of along the same lines, which is I spent about 4,000 hours in my first year teaching myself how to do it. I mean, if you put that much time into something, you're going to learn it. It's just a simple function. So
yep.
That's pretty much all there is to it.
Well, and I mean, and Sam and I did the same thing. I mean, Sam couldn't draw things, and then he decided he was going to be the artist. And then
so for 12 hours a day for a year.
Taught himself how to draw things, and it just requires real grit. You just do the thing.
Just do the thing.
So for me, there are some things that I still want to do, but it's not that I don't regret not doing them because they're things that I'm going to do once the things I'm currently doing are less important.
Like program a robot.
Like do robotics related stuff, or you know, like there's a novel that I want to write and I've even drafted it in the past, you know, for National Novel of the Month.
I've read the draft.
It's pretty okay. Needs a rewrite, whatever. But that's one of the things that at some point I'm going to do it. But, you know, I don't worry about that. Enough. Yeah, I don't worry about that fact right now because I'm doing a thing. I'm making video games. And that's my thing right now. At some point when I decide, you know what, I want to write this novel, then I'm going to sit down and fucking write that novel.
Yeah, and that's okay to basically say, here's like 10 things I really want to do, but there's only so many hours in the day, and if you are really putting in the time on, you know, one or two of them.
You can only do one or two of them.
You can't do all of it, and you got to just decide which one you're going to do.
Right now.
And in that case, I would say it doesn't necessarily mean that you don't want to do the other ones. It's just you have priorities. So there's a difference between
if you have things you want to do and you're not doing any of them.
If you're not doing anything, if you're just going home and watching, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is a great show, by the way.
Yeah.
If that's just your jam, you just go home and put on Netflix and veg out, then you just don't really want it. And that's just all there is to it.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that's me right now. So basically, I want to make games, and I'm doing that. And I want to write a novel, but not nearly as much as I want to spend my free time vegging out. That's just a fact.
And making these video games is hard.
Yeah. It is hard. I need to relax afterwards.
It does take some mental energy. So
Menergy.
So that's it.
Well, I think with that, we will wrap up this episode, this surprisingly deep episode.
We looked back, we looked forwards, we looked around.
We looked inside of ourselves.
We looked outside of the inside of ourselves.
Which is what you do all the time, technically.
That's how you normally look,
which is kind of gross.
Topographical complexity.
When you think about it. We're going to wrap this up. So thank you all for listening. And again, if you want to pass this along to anybody, if you can just think of one person right now who might enjoy either this episode, which is a little bit more on the serious side, or the previous episode, which was certainly more on the ridiculous side, think about that one person and then maybe pass this along to them. Pass the link on.
We want to grow the podcast.
So find a friend.
Send it to friends.
And
or enemies.
Or enemies. I mean, if you want to really mess up their day, you know, we could do that.
If you particularly hate one of our episodes, you should send that to all of your enemies.
Yep. Right.
So with that, we'll let you guys go. Thank you so much again for listening to Coffee with Butterscotch. We'll see you next week.
Peace.
Goodbye.